Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we are joined by one of the most extraordinary and committed national security practitioners of our time, a principled leader and a courageous proponent of American freedom. He is John Bolton, formerly the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. Before that, he served in a number of capacities, including with Fred Flights, as the Undersecretary of State. He is the author of Surrender is Not an Option, very much a leitmotif of the moment in light of what Ambassador Bolton is trying to do to prevent a surrender of sorts by the President of the United States with respect to the Obama bomb deal, as I'm fond of calling it. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back. It is so good to have you.
Very glad to be with you.
I'm particularly glad because you really have been leading an effort to help the president understand that he has another option besides the one that seems to be being advanced by many of what I call his insubordinates, namely the people who are trying to get him to stay in the Obama bomb deal, even if he can't certify that it is, as Andy McCarthy points out, not only not being complied with by the Iranians, but also not in our national security interests. Tell us a little bit about the lay of the land as you see it and why you think another option is needed.
Well, it's really amazing. Only in Washington, I think, could people come up with the approach that, by all media accounts, the president's being urged to adopt. I think there's some pretty clear lines here looking at the Iran deal. One line is that perhaps General Mattis supports. He thinks the deal's in America's national security interest, so he would certify that to Congress and stay in the deal. Then there's the view I hold, you hold, others, that the deal is not in America's security interest, and therefore we should not certify it and not stay in the deal. Now, these views are obviously opposite of one another, but they're at least coherent and intellectually consistent positions. What the president's advisors are recommending to him is to say the deal's not in America's national security interest, so we won't certify it, but we will stay in it. What possible logic is there to that? If you were confronted with a deal in the first instance that you were convinced was not in America's interest, would you enter it to begin with? Of course not. So we're being distracted by this bright, shiny object known as certification when that's not the issue at all. The issue is, do you stay in the deal or do you get out of it? And I think for the safety of not just the United States, but our friends and allies like Israel and some of the oil-producing monarchies on the Arabian Peninsula, it's critically important to get out of it and recognize this deal is facilitating Iran's path to nuclear weapons, not barring it.
Well said, of course. Let me ask you about one other piece of this. You have had extensive experience, not only at the United Nations and in the bureaucracy at the State Department, but in and out of government for decades, John Bolton. When you hear people say, we will effectively affirm the deal by staying in it, and yet we will fix what's wrong with it through negotiations, there seems to be an incoherence to that proposition as well. Am I missing something?
No, that's exactly right. To fix the deal, presumably you have to get the Iranians to agree to it. They have zero incentive to do that. The only way that you demonstrate why this deal is harmful to the United States is get out of it and then, with this new reality that you've created, use American economic pressure against the Europeans and others. One of the most insidious parts of this deal is how all the benefits to Iran are front-end loaded and all of its responsibilities and obligations are at the back end. And I think we've got to put the pressure back on, but we're simply going down a road now that allows Iran, and I might say North Korea, with which it has worked very closely over the last 25 years, to proceed toward a capacity that could have ICBMs with thermonuclear warheads hit targets in the United States in the very near future. In fact, the pace at which North Korea is going should be terribly worrying to everybody, because whatever North Korea has today, Iran will have tomorrow by writing a large enough check.
And this is a point that is often overlooked. We're very focused on the North Korean threat, but I think too few of us are appreciating what you've just said, which is they're joined at the hip, the North Koreans and Iranians, and we will be facing, I don't know if it's tomorrow, it may be this afternoon, but we're going to be facing a threat from Iran, which makes no secret, as you know so well, Mr. Ambassador, of its determination to bring death to America. Let me ask you about another topic that I know you've been focusing on as well, and that is this referendum that Iraqi Kurds voted last weekend to essentially establish an independent state of their own, the first time the Kurds have ever had one, if it comes to pass. A lot of pressure being brought to bear, not just by the Iraqis, but by the Turks, the Iranians, and the Syrians to prevent this self-determination from coming to pass. Tell us about your thoughts on where America should be, as well as what the future should be for the Kurds.
Well, I think you have to look at the Middle East as a whole strategically. And the fact is that the country we used to know as Iraq has collapsed and is not going to be put back together again. I think the country we used to know as Syria is not going to be put back together again, even after ISIS is defeated. This confusion, this collapse and spreading anarchy will continue. And in reality, the Iraqi Kurds have been de facto independent for 25 years. And their referendum, which overwhelmingly supported formal independence, really just identifies what already exists. So I think the United States should not be eager to take the government in Baghdad, and which is a subordinate, a satellite of the Ayatollahs in Tehran, and extend its influence any farther, and certainly not over the Kurds. Now, Kurdish independence from Iraq causes ripple effects in Turkey, in Syria, in Iran. There are some serious questions, but honestly, this is an issue of recognizing reality. It's not because of sort of a blind adherence to the notion of democratic government, although that's certainly a positive step for the Kurds. It's the geopolitical reality that they have created and that there's nobody big enough to turn around. So I think it's in America's interest to recognize an independent Kurdistan. I think it's going to happen anyway. And that's just something that has been caused in the Middle East by a whole variety of factors, but it is a reality.
Yeah. A future benefit, further benefit of it seems to me is that it does, in fact, create problems for various countries that are either already avowedly hostile to us, like Iran and Syria, and one that is not yet overtly or at least recognized as such, Turkey. In this regard, let me ask you about one other effort of a similar kind in a different part of the world. As you know, the Catalans in Spain have also had a referendum seeking to allow them self-determination as well. They have confronted very considerable pressure from the Spanish government, including violence against their referendum. The European Union isn't happy about it either. Where do you come down on that proposition and again, American interests therewith?
Well, there, I think American interests lie with keeping the Spanish state together. You know, in a functioning democratic society, which Spain is, one particular region can't just up and decide it's going to hold its own referendum without regard to the rest. And that makes it different from Iraq, which has ceased to function as a national government. All the polls before this referendum indicated that the opponents of secession had a majority, and they boycotted the polls. So I don't think the referendum results really reflect the opinion in Catalonia. And so I think the violence is obviously unfortunate, but I think some of the secessionists were happy to provoke it. You know, ultimately, I think the proponents of the European Union, although they're reluctant to say it out loud, like these secessionist movements, the Basque country in Spain, Wales and Scotland in the United Kingdom, separatist movements in Italy and elsewhere, because if you go from a union of a European Union of nations to a European Union of 500 grand duchies, where do you think power will flow? It will flow to the bureaucrats in Brussels. And so I think a strong Europe of strong nations is really best for the Europeans. It's certainly best for the United States.
Yeah. Unless, of course, those strong nations are willing to surrender their sovereignty to this European Union, which is deeply hostile to us, it seems to me. So much more on this to talk about. Mr. Ambassador, I hope you'll come back to us again soon, and I pray that in the meantime, the president will have an opportunity to reflect upon the Bolton plan for withdrawing from this defective Obama bomb deal. It certainly is the right course, it seems to me. Thank you for your service in that regard and so much else. Next up, we will be speaking with Russ Dahlin about Venezuela and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.